Okay, let's start because we're not supposed to run late today.
Oh, we are really late. Too bad.
So, welcome. My name is Amishan Toth. Jeff Hoyt from A Voice of Vashon and Jeremy Landsman from where in Alaska?
From Anchorage. From various.
And from various stations. And I'm kind of here.
A rich history of cult science.
I'm here mostly from radio.indiemedia.org. It's kind of that's what I'll say I'm from right now. So we're going to kind of each talk for a couple minutes about our own perspective on webcasting or podcasting or landcasting. And then we're going to have most of the time, hopefully, for a discussion. So maybe I'll start and then turn it over to Jeff. You want to go next? And then Jeremy. Okay. Let me
unplug into this.
Use your internet access, actually, if you're okay with that.
That's not me.
In some ways, that can be considered podcasting. the difference between webcasting and podcasting is that webcasting takes an audio stream and broadcasts it live, and that's in this column here. So as it's happening, for instance, right now I'm webcasting us in this room. I need to change the status from a previous, but this is from a previous event I webcast from. This is us right here, and we could listen to it in three different formats: 16 kilobytes per second MP3, 64 kilobytes per second MP3, or AudioVorbis, which is an open format. So I'm web streaming one account to a centralized server that gives us bandwidth enough to serve lots and lots of listeners on the internet. So that's webcasting. Podcasting is a fancy word for archiving an audio program, compressing it in an MP3 format or another compressed format, and then posting it on a website so you can listen to it later, such as this article here. And we can click on there and download it and listen to it. iTunes, for instance, lets you, and there's other programs too, let you automatically grab those programs and put them in little MP3 players and like that. That's kind of a different step. And as far as like putting your audio out on the web, that's what a podcast is. What else should I say? I'm going to say a little bit more about webcasting specifically. And I'm going to turn you on another content sharing platform. So if you have a program and you want to, this is for podcasting or archiving, if you have a program and you want to put it out there for everybody so that they can listen to it whenever they want on the internet, or other stations can play it, I would suggest that radio.indymedia.org and radioforall.net are the most commonly used distribution platforms that I know of.
Can you say those again slowly?
Yeah. Radio.indymedia.org, this is the URL here.
Right.
And radioforall.net. And those are the two most commonly used platforms for distributing audio on the internet that I know of. Here's radioforall.net. This was started in 1996, and as far as I know, it was the first distribution platform for distributing MP3s on the web. So you have shows listed over here that you can download, and a lot of these shows are posted here every single week. And this is a place where other radio stations can download that syndicated content and then play it on the air every single week. Like Mind Over Matters, which comes out of KXP here, was broadcast this morning on KXP. They posted today's show.
Jaws on.
Jaws.
Yeah.
How's it going? So this is today's show. They posted it to Radio Project. What other stations broadcast your show? Do you know? Or is it mostly
there's,
listeners?
There's a couple dozen at least. So it's all over the country. And it varies from week to week. Some people pick it up every week. Some people just pick up program. Or they pick up pieces of it because Mind Over Matters has different segments that people use. So.
Cool.
Weird.
Yeah, so it works. People syndicate the content on this platform and other people download it. And then if you're a beginner to podcasting, I would really recommend one of these two sites as a very simple, easy way to post your programs. Radioforall.net has their own way to add a program here on the right. And you can go through a step-by-step process. They explain how to do it. And radio.indymedia.org also has a step-by-step process that's based on the web and allows you to publish your article with the title, author, summary. And then you attach your MP3 files down here.
Another one that a lot of people use is AudioPort.
AudioPort, excellent. And what's the URL for that? So
AudioPort.org.
Yeah.
However, it's you have to be a Pacifica affiliate in order to use it. There is password protection.
It's a lot of it is actually open. I discovered in my house. Apparently, a lot of it is not protected. Only certain shows are protected on the site. The whole thing is not blocked.
Well, I haven't found it at work, so. That's
all right. They work on that.
So here's Media Minutes again, which we saw posted on radio.newmedia.org. Sometimes producers will post on multiple sites because they often have a different audience and they want to try and get their their distribution out as far as possible. I think Media Minutes might also post on Radio for all.net. I'm not sure. So this is another one that would be good to use. And I don't know. I haven't used this very much, so I can't speak a whole lot to how it's password protected or not. But this is part of the proposal that people are bringing this weekend, that the Northwest Community Radio Network use AudioPort as a host for content that we share.
I was going to mention that AudioPort is a whole lot faster in the server than the other two.
Okay, that's good to know.
Well, as long as we're talking, I've used both quite a lot.
Okay.
And that brings up, I've experienced a little, what I can think is congestion on your and Radio for All servers. So can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah. Both radio.nemedia.org and Radio for All are bare bones, low budget, anarchist groups that have no money. And what that results in is that have old equipment that often is really full and used heavily and don't have a whole lot of bandwidth, as opposed to AudioPort, which has quite a bit of money behind it, so they can have a very robust system and high bandwidth use or availability. The other thing with radio.indiemedia.org is that it occasionally goes down, just like radioforall.org, and volunteers have to, you know, go down to the server and reboot or whatever they have to do. So sometimes it's down occasionally. It's not super reliable. But on the other hand, it offers things maybe that AudioPort does not. And I'll move to that now, which is webcasting. So this is another service that radio.indiemedia.org provides, which is service space for you to webcast. If you want to broadcast live to people on the internet, you need to have enough bandwidth to serve as many listeners as you want to listen to. For instance, Voice of Vashon broadcasts to listeners, and you can speak about that in a minute maybe, about how many listeners you have and what your server capacity is. But a lot of these stations here in this gray column don't have their own server space, or they have very little server space, and they use the radio.indiemedia.org server to host more listeners. And this is a very easy way, if you want to webcast, a very easy way to just kind of get your hands dirty, try it maybe for a week or two, or if you have very, very low budget and you want to webcast, this is a good place to do that. You'd have to email the IMC audio list to request an account for that. I set up an account, and three accounts actually. And here they are here. I need to change the name for that this weekend, but we have zero listeners. They didn't tell anybody about it that I was going to be webcasting, but it'll tell you how many listeners you have, and you can have multiple formats. I chose three formats for a couple reasons. 16 kilobytes per second is a good format for people who have dial-up modems to listen online. In order for you to listen online, you know, audio is a lot of information to pipe through an internet cable. And at 16 kbps, you're not going to have a really great audio sound, but you're going to be able to reach those modem dial-up listeners. 64 kbps is kind of the bottom line broadcast quality compression for MP3 quality. So I've also included that here for people who want to broadcast on the radio and have a faster internet connection. And then the third one is Ad Vorbis, which is kind of like a computer nerd's format. It's variable format, speed format, like real audio is. It changes depending on what your connection speed is, and it's an open software platform, which MP3 is not. So I include that here also for the free piece. I'll just speak for another minute. I've just taken 15 minutes. I'm just going to really quickly say a little bit about coordinated webcasting and its relationship to FM broadcast, mostly with micro radio and pirate radio. In the past, radio.umedia.org has facilitated collaborative streaming projects. I'll just give a couple examples. One was from the WTO meetings in Cancun, in Qatar. And Greenpeace had a boat outside of Qatar because they weren't really allowed to do much there. And they webcast live from there. We also had a webcast from Amsterdam, and one from England, one from New York, and one from Seattle. So we had five webcasts going, and we assigned each other a time slot depending on the time zone. And we had one webcast URL, so you could listen to all five with one URL, one station, basically. And we assigned programming slots to these different time zones, and they provided content which let us have a 24-hour broadcast with really interesting content from all over the world. That's one thing that webcasting can let you do, is coordinate broadcasting like that and collaborate in that way. another thing that we've done on webcasting is have people post MP3s like this, you know, and I can, maybe somebody from Portland wants to post something they want to webcast on this, for instance, example, a webcast I'm doing right now, I could download it and then put it on my playlist in Winamp and play it here on the webcast. A lot of times these webcasts have a relationship with FM broadcasts, like DFM radio television in Amsterdam has a microwave unlicensed broadcast. Enemy Combatant Radio, here it is, has a relationship with Free Radio San Francisco that broadcasts their content often. And this is a way so you can have an open station. It's not illegal to webcast. You can open studio and not worry about equipment seizures or anything. And the community can come in and have programs. And then an unlicensed broadcaster can broadcast the content in a different location. So it solves some of the legal issues that come up. Okay, I've spoke for a long time, and I'm going to turn it over to somebody else, and maybe we can wait for questions at the end. You want to do that? Okay. Jeff?
I'm Jeff Hoyt. I live on Vashon Island, and our radio station is not really a radio station. We've never had a license. We've never gotten to broadcast over the actual air. Voice of Vashon started in 1999, and we came to be simply because of the LPFM program. When the FCC announced the licensing windows for that, we applied. But then when the National Association of Broadcasters got the rules changed and all of the spacing requirements got changed, we got offed, so our application got tossed. So we were left with this decision, you know, what do we do? We've got all these volunteers, we're ready to create content, but we can't go on the air. What are we going to do? So we decided, well, we'll webcast. And that way we can at least have a place to distribute our programming. So we really wondered whether we could even keep this operation running. How could you fund a webcast in a local community of 10,000 people and actually exist and keep earning the money to stay afloat? We built a studio with all volunteer labor. On the highest point on the island, so that one day if we do get a license, we can put up a tower and start broadcasting. And interestingly, we're in our seventh year of webcasting without actually having an over-the-air radio signal, and we've been in the black ever since we started. We get great support from the community, advertisers who are our underwriters who give us money to keep going. People come to the station to create their programming. It's really pretty amazing. We got an 11-year-old kid who does a classic rock show on Saturday mornings. That's what's playing right now, Drew Pine. You can click there to pick up the show, and then I guess if you click OK, it might go. I do this on a Mac, so it's a little different for me. But anyway, Drew and his
Archie Diocese. And the City of London, England, began selling used burial sites for the equivalent of about $5,600, offering to inter bodies.
So that's Drew, and he's got listeners all over the planet, you know, and it's pretty cool. We can only take about 50 listeners at a time on Voice of Vashon. That's the extent of our bandwidth. And it's tough to get a local community behind webcasting if that's your only means of distribution. Because just to give you an idea on numbers, when we started in 99, About 1 in 50 radio listeners over the age of 12 said that they even interacted with web radio at least once a month. And at once a month, that's not exactly steady, solid listenership. In the last few months, those numbers have increased dramatically. Actually, right now, it's like 1 in 5 radio listeners get on web radio at least once a month. And Arbitron's also saying that 40% of web listeners will regularly tune in to an out-of-town signal. And for Voice of Vashon, what we've done is we've created a means by which the community can get on the air, not on the air, but on the web, and create programming. What we found is that even with our limited bandwidth, even with the fact that you can't really, you know, have that many people listening like you would with an over-the-air station, our community volunteers, they just want to be involved. They just want to get in there and create programming. They aren't really that concerned with how many people are listening. And so what happens is it's a creative exercise for a lot of the people on the Vashon community to learn how to do radio, to learn the equipment, to learn how to create content, to learn flow and continuity, what works, what doesn't. And what we found is that all of our web shows, what you see there is Classic Rock and Beyond with Drew, Kaleidoscope, which is a Northwest music collection with Sylvia Hannon. Celtic Air is a Celtic show with John Daly. We often see him wearing his kilts and playing his bagpipes. He's big into Celtic music. And then whenever we don't have a show, we just stream music from around the Northwest that we have set into a program called Web Jockey, which you can put music into, and it will just automatically play whatever tunes we have programmed into it. So whenever we don't have a show specifically, Northwest Music comes in and just keeps the stream alive with music that either has a connection to Vashon Island, we have all the artists from Vashon in there, or music from around the Northwest. Then we got the Elvis Fan Club with Curtis Milligan. He's one of our original content providers. He's really into Elvis and all these other shows, and it's been amazing to see this thing grow, because not only what we find is that these people all interact with their own universe of friends, family, clients, colleagues, whomever they know, that's who they market to. They go out and tell people, listen to my show, and that's how they bring in audience. And so we have these really interesting cross-section of audience. Deviled Eggs is a comedy program with two guys on the island. They're very funny. Ladies of the Evening is a couple of women on the island that do a kind of a talk show. It's pretty wild. And we've been cranking it out now for 7 years, and what we've found over time is that we've had to rethink our mission. Because all along we thought, okay, we want our license, that's our ultimate goal. We want to be on the air so people can listen in their cars. Because ultimately, with web radio, it's really hard to get people all over Vashon to commit to web radio, because still, even now, at 1 in 5 listening at least once a month, most local people don't know how to access web radio. They won't, because they can't listen to it in their car. They can listen. It's limited mobility. But now, you know, Seattle is ultimately going to be all Wi-Fi. It's just a matter of time. Internet car radios are becoming more and more of a reality now. It's just a matter of time before it's going to be a lot easier to access web radio in your car and away from your home computer workstation. But as we've gotten deeper into this project, we've come to realize that we're not a radio station, so let's stop trying to be a radio station. Let's think about what we really are, which is a learning laboratory. We really have become a training facility, a studio, if you will, that people can come into and learn how to do radio, and we have a webcast, which is the means by which they can distribute their content. So we've rewritten our mission statement to not really say that we're an internet radio station as much as we are a facility, a recording facility by which islanders can create, produce, and distribute their programming. And then what they want to do from that point forward is really up to them. And this plays well with our ultimate plans, because the FCC is going to be opening a non-commercial FM license window sometime in early 2007. We don't have a prayer of getting one of those licenses, really, because nobody in Seattle does. If you're too close to the city, and we are, it's going to be really hard to find your way onto the dial. But but non-commercial FM is all about education. It's all about training and learning. We've been up and running in the black for 7 years. We've got a lot of politicians on our side that represent Washington who have committed to getting in there and hammering on the FCC when the window opens. And we think we have a decent shot to get an actual license at about 150, 200 watts that would actually cover the island and allow us to broadcast over the air. But we can't count on it. So because of that, we're just deciding, all right, if we don't get that license, and this is our last and best shot at getting one, this will be good enough. What we can do is continue to provide a means by which islanders can create programming and be empowered to distribute, you know, what they believe in. And that brings us to podcasting. Just a couple of statistics to throw at you here. Podcasting is the next step up from webcasting, because it is ultimately the way that you can take your content out on the road. You can get people to be able to take it with them, put it on their iPods, put it on their music players. They can listen to it whenever they want to, as opposed to webcasting, where you have to listen at a specific time, which is tough to ask somebody who can only listen on their computer to do. You know, hey, I got a great show. Tuesday, 9 o'clock, be sure you're listening. Well, that's asking a lot of a web radio listener to have to be sitting at their computer at that particular time. With podcasting, though, it's all on demand. And when you create the show, it automatically, if they subscribe, it automatically uploads to their hard drive, which is additionally empowering to the user of the podcast, the listener of the podcast. Numbers vary. I saw one study that said there are 20 million podcasts out there now. 5 months ago, there were just 3 million podcasts. I don't know if that's true or not, because Apple, I've read several blogs that claim that Apple, who hosts podcasts on their iTunes music store, claims that in 2004 there were 4,000 podcasts, in 2005 there were 61 million podcasts, and this year, according to Apple, there are 266 million different podcasts. I've never been able to confirm those numbers, and I don't think I believe them, because you can't believe everything you read in the blogosphere. I do think, though, that most podcast subscribers access and subscribe to podcasts through the iTunes Music Store. It really is very easy to put your podcast up there. You just apply through iTunes, and it goes in there, and it's a really powerful way to get distribution, because once they accept it, once they decide, okay, this is a good show, it works, technically it works, we can access the RSS feed. A lot of people, I think the majority of people, subscribe to podcasts through the iTunes Music Store. My podcast goes through there. And there are dozens and dozens. The cool thing about podcasting is once you do one, there are dozens of podcast directories out there that are search engines for people to find podcasts. And as soon as you've got the feed working correctly, your podcast goes out into all those directories. It just happens. And it's amazing. I do a podcast, and then I go to Podcast Pickle and Podcast Alley and all these different directories. And within a day, there it is. It's up, and you know, people are accessing it. I'm the only one on Voice of Vashon who has actually figured out podcasting. My mission now is to take some of these programs that we have here locally and show people how to create their own podcast sites to give them an additional layer of distribution that can be for themselves, that can be more about for themselves. Now, it is about serving the community in a lot of ways, but if you have a program that has universal appeal, why not get it out into more places? If you could go to... do you have the audio?
Yeah.
Clicked in? If you could go to greaterradio.com, that's my website, show you how to. This is mine.
Wait, 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 I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Are the shows done live, or do they pre-record them?
On Voice of Ashon,
yeah.
Some are done live. Yeah, most of them are archived now. So this is my website. I'm a voiceover actor, and I do all these different things in radio. So all these hats represent different aspects. Is the audio up? I'm wondering.
Playing bumper shoot. So first up, Hawthorne Heights.
Oh, that's the Voice of Ashon.
I
have to disable that. Okay. Go over to the cowboy hat there. Yeah. Okay, this is, I do a lot of wacky stuff. This is my podcast. It's called Hoitus Interruptus. And you click on that, and it takes you to the podcast page. And my podcasts are a thing that I call lyrical storytelling, which is they're true stories. They come from, you know, all aspects of my life. And I use music to help advance the stories along. Here's just a minute or so of this.
Oh, hi. Thanks for tuning in. You caught me at a good time. I'm on hold with tech support. Could be weeks before I talk to an actual person, but I do have my friendly automated corporate operator here with me. She keeps me company here in the hold queue. She'll be along any minute now. Always likes to make sure I know she's close by.
Your call will be answered in the order it was received.
There, you see, I'm telling you, she is on it. Of course, that was the sixth time I've heard that particular voice prompt, but what if I forget? Yeah, sure, I'll hold. And I'll hold. And I'll hold. I'll watch my kids endure their teen years, graduate from high school, and leave for college. While I hold.
I'm just a waste of energy. She's just a waste of my time.
So I incorporate contemporary music into these stories and play the irony in this particular piece, which is called Voice Jail, is that I am one of those automated operators. As a voice actor, I'm on a lot of these automated voicemail systems, and I'm the guy you call and get told that your call is very important to me when it in fact isn't. And so later on, there's this whole reveal of, where I say, you know, yes, I have in fact uttered for recorded posterity the words, "Your call is very important to us." But I didn't really mean it, so, you know. And then I say, I've even suffered the ultimate indignity of having those words spoken to me by me. And, so there's all these songs that come in and out of this show, and the way I do this podcast is, and this is an important thing to know if you're going to do podcasting, if you're going to use music, is that for me, to do what I'm doing with contemporary artists, that's Jack Johnson there, and I've got Def Leppard and Michael Nesmith and all kinds of artists in this particular show. But I pay ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, and Sound Exchange, which are the four licensing music licensing companies in America, to make sure that the composers, the players, the artists are all compensated for my use of their music. And they actually, all of those companies have, organizations have web licenses that apply to podcasting. If you don't go through BMI or ASCAP and you use licensed music like this, you have to go through, you have to use podcast safe music, which you can find in Creative Commons and PodSafe Music Network. These are artists who contribute their music out there into the stratosphere for people to use. Creative Commons is the license that you would get. And the music, there you go. It gives you a way to use audio music that is podcast safe. And in the end, I guess, you know, I'll wrap up here. There's another thought I had here, and I'm losing. Just interestingly, this voice jail thing I just did. I've been doing my podcast for about a year now. And the thing about podcasting that's interesting is if you take control of it, if you decide, I'm going to make this thing go out there and find an audience. What I've been doing is every time I do a podcast, I did one about fear of travel, where I was in Luxor, Egypt, and I really thought I was about to get the shit kicked out of me because I found myself in this part of the city that had me very frightened. And in fact, I couldn't have been safer and had this amazing experience. And so I did this whole show about fear. It was called Fear Itself. And what I did after I did that podcast is I sent emails out to blogs that I found that were writing about political issues and were writing a lot about the culture of fear in this country. And I said, here's an interesting show. You might find it intriguing. I just wanted to point you to it. And then the bloggers, very appreciative, would go to the show, they'd listen to it, they loved it, they blog about it. I put a post in my post that links back to their post because I want to promote them as well. And so the whole thing about the blogosphere, podcasting is a blog. It's an audio blog. And if you use the blogosphere to cross-promote your content, you can actually increase your listenership dramatically. And each podcast I do, I think about who would like to listen to this. And then I go out and find the people that are doing websites and posts that relate to this subject matter, and I point them there. I don't just wait for people to come. With Voice Jail, I actually talk about a website called gethuman.com, which actually lists a database where you can find the secret way to get past the corporate call center and go straight to the operator. And they've got their, go up to their blog there, and their post, I scroll down just a little bit.
What date?
Just right there. There's all kinds of spelling errors in this thing, but here's their post about my podcast. And in an instant, I had, in 10 days this month, I had twice as many hits on my site as I've had in the last year. And then on top of that, yesterday I got a call from a producer at 2020 at ABC. They're doing a feature on 2020 about how people are taking their customer service nightmares to the internet. And they heard about my podcast through this, and they want to use a piece of the audio and interview me, and it's going to be on 2020, I guess, in a couple of months or something. But through proactive reach out and touch someone type of podcast marketing, you can exponentially increase activity to your podcast. You can't sit around and wait for it to happen. The first 6 months I did my podcast, I just thought, okay, I'm doing a show. Everybody come listen. Well, they didn't, because they didn't know it was out there. And then when I figured this out, it's completely changed it. And you have to take the steps yourself. But it's really an amazing thing.
Can you give an example, like what search engines do you use to type in to find people?
There's all kinds of search engines for blogs. Squidoo is a really interesting one. Squidoo. That's created by Seth Godin, who's kind of a marketing guru, and he's got all kinds of. It'll just take you to, through this website. You can find all kinds of things. It's an amazing place. But I've never actually searched for community radio there. I'm not sure what you'll find. You just have to kind of work it and see what's out there. But I think podcasting is absolutely an amazing way to communicate. But you won't get a lot of activity unless you're the one letting your wheels turn and thinking about how can I draw people to what it is I want to say. And that's it. Jeremy.
Yep. Stay with it.
Okay.
Yeah. You're the operator.
Okay.
You mentioned that the voice of Ashon is limited to 50 connections, and I'm going to assume people here know nothing, but I have the same problem. So to have CD quality, you want 1.4 megabits a second. To have telephone dial-up modem quality, that was saying 16 kilobits a second. That's a lot less. So the sound quality is a lot lower. So one of the main expenses of doing this is the connectivity, which is how much you pay your internet service provider to provide whatever level of service you're going to get. I'm going to try to make what I have to say really brief, because it gets to be pretty technical, and basically what I want to do is plant the germ of the idea, because nobody's doing it, and maybe you can find people who are technical who can take this further than just my idea. It's only an idea. I haven't done it other than here. I did it just before coming to the show, and there's a little computer, laptop, and a couple of things. So the question is, how do you get beyond the 50 without paying a huge fee to some internet service provider and then also increase your sound quality? And the idea I have, you don't have to connect right now.
Okay.
We could do it just at the end here.
Okay.
Is not to put it on the internet. Right? So how about if you just put up a powerful wireless access point, run your own server. Now, what is a server? Server is actually, for audio, it's a piece of software you download and put on your PC, your Mac, whatever it is that you use for a computer. So I have on this computer, maybe I could plug yours in.
You want to plug yours in?
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting. You don't need to see it right now. Put a Shoutcast up.
Okay.
When I learned about this, was just several years ago, so there's a little bit of history. I found out, just like you, a commercial TV station had to do digital TV, and I found out how easy it was to add an audio music stream, sound only, to the DTV signal. And then, and I was furious at VMI and CSAC for making me pay for webcasting, which I wasn't doing. But I had to pay for it anyway. Well, after I found out how easy it was to do music, I said, well, I've already paid the license fee, I might as well just go ahead and do it. So, up at the top, it says, I think there's somewhere about how to download. So if you can download a server. And they have one for Linux and Mac. Like, there may be one for Mac. Be a DJ, tells you how to. And there's when you get Winamp, which is a player, a very common player, that's one I use. There are plenty of others.
Right here.
It also has a plug-in encoder that you get to create the stream. Now, you'll be doing that if you webcast anyway. But the server, you could run yourself. Okay, did that, and then you connect it to your own wireless access point, which you put where an FM transmitter would go, and you make it accessible to people to connect directly. So if you want to do that and sort of demonstrate, this is very crude. It could be much easier. And I'll tell you where I got the idea. I opened up my laptop at my house in Anchorage, and I didn't have a wireless access point at the time, and I saw, wow, there's something called Tall Alaska Wi-Fi. What's that? And I clicked on it, connected. Wow, it connected. And then I typed in something, see if I could, you know, use it, free internet. Wow. And it came up with a screen that said, you have to pay to use this. So it didn't connect me to what I wanted. I thought, gee, where is this thing? I'm getting a signal from somewhere, and it's delivering this thing to me. Couldn't it do something else? So all of these things together gave me the idea that, well, I guess I could buy a more powerful access point, put it on a tight place, and broadcast. Now, who's going to see it are the very few people who open up their laptops and they see something. You have to make it easy. This is not so easy, so if you want to do it, so.
What are the numbers?
It's supposed to come in automatically. It didn't work today. I have to explain that to the more technical people later. 192.169.1.2 And then next, no,
that's me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then down below that, 169.1.1 should work. That's what was working. all this, ideally, it would work like this wireless hotspot thing, and it would just come up with the screen, and if somebody wrote the software that would just say, if you want to listen, click on this, and the software would automatically download, and that would, and music would start playing. So I haven't done that. And to make it usable for the average person, you have to set something like that up. But you could get a range, I'm pretty sure, to laptops of about a mile, and to people who have a little better equipment for receiving internet service than the typical laptop inside a house, I know you can get 10, 20 miles.
Okay.
And you don't pay for anything. Plus, there's it's not internet. Okay, now you go to 192.168.1.5.
What kind of wireless access?
8,000. Yeah, there you go.
Would you? What? When you say you buy more powerful wireless access point, critical? What kind of device exactly? Like literal?
I'll show you in a second if we have the time. Go ahead. Is it not connected?
Why are you poking holes in your security group when they come support?
So security is an issue. I don't want to get too technical here. Plus, I have a cold, and I have one better ear and one bad, and the better one doesn't work right now. Is the cold? So the security, there are security issues. I use XP. XP has built-in now firewall, which is seems to be okay in my experience if you're a little careful with it. So you'd have to do that. But if you want somebody who's a little bit computer literate to be helping you with this, you ought to have a server. You ought to have a script server so that the page that instructs the listener and how to connect comes up. I don't know anything about how to do that. I've never done it. But it's all stuff that a lot of people do know how to do, and you can find them. The fees that I would pay, I know one station, KPIG, which is on Shoutcast, would be paying $10,000 a month if they had to pay for the bandwidth they use. They'll have up to 2,000 listeners at a time. That's a lot of money. So, I mean, they're lucky they were one of the first, so they get it for free. Hoping you never got around to billing them. It happens occasionally when you're early in.
How big is this game thing?
Yeah, what do you want to see? We could just demo that later.
Okay.
We were talking about the looking at some. Oh, I know what it was. The go to highgainantenna.com. And we're talking about the equipment.
You're going to need to go back to the
H-I, not the G-H, I think. If not that, it's H-Y.
Okay.
This is a...
What's that?
Oh, you're connected to my access point.
Yeah,
I get
Nathan.
HighGainAntenna.com. I use a wireless access, a wireless internet system, and the guy who is on top of all the newest and best access points and radios and stuff works for me part time, and so he says this is the best deal right now. For under $100, you can get a 400 milliwatt access point. 400 milliwatts doesn't sound like a lot. It's a little bit more than the power in a cell phone. Cell phones allowed, but because it's spread spectrum, it's the equivalent of 10 times that at least. So it's the equivalent of 4 watts. And then if you put that into a decent antenna, you'll wind up with the equivalent of 40 watt CRP if it were an FM station. The disadvantage is that it's wireless is at a shorter wavelength. It's about this kind of wavelength, and FM wavelength is like 10 feet. This stuff we're using now is this shorter wavelength. So it's blocked. It doesn't go through objects as well, trees, tree leaves, and whatnot. Reduced signal strength quite a lot. That's not it.
No, it's not.
H-I-G-A-I-N. H-I-G-A. put it in either.
Yeah.
This is sort of new to me too, so I haven't bought one of them. But he's got two that he's been testing, and they put one. I think they put one in service to be a backhaul.
I got a message.
To take out the GH. HI. Oh yeah, you did. You did. Well, HIGH.
Like antenna sensors have an A
at
the end of it?
Say again?
Antenna sensors have an A on the end of the word.
Oh, it has a net? I mean, A and T and an A. I guess.
A-E.
A-E.
That's a pretty... I'm really bad at non-spelling
publicly. Yeah, me too. Maybe I should try it. Since I've done it, I've gone there. Anyway, they have antennas and radio that's under $100, and it's pretty nifty. He says it's got Linux under the hood, by the way, and easy to access it and get in its root. So, and you can do all sorts of stuff with it. So he's been experimenting with it.
It's a different website.
Yeah. Over, so give it a try. It's really important to find inexpensive good stuff that you can use. That's, I guess.
So just a point of clarification. You're saying that an alternative to radio webcasting is setting up a wireless network that's not on the internet, much like, I don't know, people's offices are hooked into the same network, perhaps. And broadcasting this through a high-end or high-gain antenna?
Yeah, an omni antenna. It's supplement. I'm not saying it replaces a FM. FM and AM are ubiquitous. And I'd like to know more about this internet radio in the car. I haven't experienced that or heard about it.
So are you saying if you, in order to do this, and I'm sorry if I'm not getting it, but you already have a wireless connection, and this antenna boosts your range. Is that what it does?
Yeah, let me just set this down.
And that makes sure exactly what it does.
The you don't need to do this.
Maybe
and I'll tell you what, I can provide the URLs later. I'll go find it rather than. So let me explain. This is the same with FM. FM and wireless internet. All radio is the same deal. You have a radio signal coming out of this gizmo. That's the transmitter. In this case, it's a transmitter and receiver. And the signal comes out of a wire. Now, when you get an access point, like in my laptop, it's built in, all this stuff, you can't see it. And when you get one of these computer cards, I'll hand it over. I think I've got a bunch of them in here. That is useful to take a look at. This is a typical computer card has an antenna built in at the top. This is a PCMCIA card, but it's in there. The not so typical is this, and it's got an antenna connector on it. And I got this from a different company, wisp-router.com, and I've known about them for a while, so I know that's the URL, wisp-router. And they also have low-price stuff. This is 200 milliwatts. Now you can get 400 milliwatt cards. This is old, and it's not working, but I can hand it around, you can see. Just got an antenna wire. Then you can plug the wire in and have an antenna. Well, this is a little bitty portable antenna. I use this when I'm on the road to connect to weak signals. it has a little bit of gain. The reason that what gain means is that it, instead of covering everything, it shoots or receives signals more from a particular direction. In this case, all the way around, but not up and down. And so it collects the signal from the horizon and runs it into the wire. So that's antenna gain. So when you start out with an FM transmitter, this is sort of like same FM or this stuff, with 1 watt, and if this has a gain of 2, then you come out with 2 watts towards the horizon. Equivalent. Okay? Total amount of energy is the same. Answer the question. So, no?
No, I wasn't asked.
Oh,
okay. I was asking this 5 octave. You said 5 octave? 5 octave, maybe?
No, that's wire.
Oh,
It's coax or cable.
All coax.
So what you would do when you want, this is the same for FM, as I say, anything, any rules that you see about FM about how the system works and how to get coverage would be the same for wireless internet. The only difference from wireless internet to what I'm suggesting is you don't connect to the internet. You cover a neighborhood. You need elevation to get clear objects if it obstructs. So and you don't want a long wire because the signal disappears in the wire. If you ran 100 feet of this, most of it would just turn into heat along the way. So you want to have, if you found this highgainantenna.com site, you find the radio is built to be outside. And it sits up on the tower or whatever your elevated pipe on the roof of your building, whatever it is, or your home. And you have a very short cable.
How does radio connect to the computer?
Say again, how's it connect to the computer? It's an internet. What
ethernet?
It's ethernet. Yeah, it's got ethernet terminal on it, and that's how you feed these things. And so that's what I've got here, is a wireless access point. This thing isn't working as a demo, but have a minute. And pass that around. This is a cheap little 30 milliwatt, so it's very low power. But it's got an Ethernet connector on the back and a power connector. And the antenna is screwed on. You can unscrew it and put on a bigger antenna if you like. And I got that at CompUSA, just a piece of something I used to provide access to the internet for visitors.
I used one to catch a blog. And that's you're not necessarily broadcasting a radio signal or webcasting or Wi-Fi casting a radio signal so much as you're providing free internet service to a much larger area. And one of the things that I've experienced with my streaming cases, particularly with streaming, but with wireless projects that I'm working on again, you know, every time somebody discovers that free internet site, everybody else's service goes down a little bit.
Well,
yeah, so
okay, what you
did,
and here's what you're saying. What I got with this is somewhere between 1 and 54 megabits a second of connectivity. The lower the data rate that you set your radio to, the further it'll go for the same power, all of the conditions being used. But it's not on the internet. The only thing people can get off of it in this theoretical, you know, music service or audio service is your one server. It's serving up your program. In your case, it would be the voice of Ashon, for example. There's no internet there. So basically, your main problem would be to let people know that it's there and how to use it. So how to use it becomes easy if you have a computer person, like Ashon here, who could write the screens to have it set up automatically as soon as they see that in the little list of what to connect to. And the other part, letting people know that it's there, it's just one of many ways to get the message out. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So I'd really like to see, by the way, there are some technical things about how these wireless things work. If somebody got really into it, you could extend that range quite a lot further by having passive reception, so it didn't have full two-way connectivity. And there's a way to have these cards go into what's called promiscuous mode, where they can listen to everybody's traffic. But if you wrote the right kind of code, and this is my radio guy, he's giving me a long explanation about this. He just said, "Well, you got to get somebody to do this." Yeah, go into promiscuous mode. I hardly ever. I think I've heard of that before. And then it'll just listen to this. Well, you know, I've been in promiscuous mode. So I just received, without the acknowledgement, you have another unit somewhere nearby that thinks it's talking to. So it'd be like it's eavesdropping, like the NSA would like to do in all of this. So.
My question, okay. I'm very intrigued in this. I'm thinking about using it for outreach to our communities that are like over the hill from our 100 watts.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of
right.
They could give you.
So you're saying, since it's not on the internet, you don't have to pay the RIAA.
Well, I read the rules and it says internet.
What if
this is not an internet.
What if you use the internet to get the signal through the computer
that's going to be transmitted.
Make it
on a private channel.
Make it private.
And so you just use your a straight shoutcast stream and then stream it off of that and then stream it out again, essentially?
Shoutcast.
Yeah,
you know, legally, this is a loophole. And if the piece of the pipe is on the internet, I guess it does open a chain. That if somebody were to want to get on you about copyright, they might be able to do that. But it's extremely unlikely.
You could just put it on top of the hill within the radio receiver, though.
You could. Yeah. And you could create the stream at that location. Yeah. And if it's ever on the internet, I don't know how the copyright rule is violated.
So we have another 15 minutes. I just want to make sure that people have opportunities to ask questions of Jeff and Jeremy and myself as well. I'm just going to... I know your hand was up first, and then you and Jeremy.
I've got a question. I've got a Netscape at home, and I pick up a signal on a cordless lifting antenna from upstairs in my mom's room. And the question is, I know that we receive the signal and all that stuff to show, you know, the signal's coming from the internet. I got a question. When you give a signal, do we give a signal when, like in the internet, if you want to search for someone, address?
No. If you could connect for a minute and show all the wireless access points, when you do wireless, you go into a menu on your computer,
right,
and it shows a list of what's available to connect to. And so if there's a signal there, it's advertising itself. Gives out as what's called a system ID, an SSID, then it'll be in the list and you just click on it. And there's the list.
That's how they from you.
Yeah. So you have to have I get kind of technical here, but a DHCP server, you want to have your SQUID server so that no matter what they do after they connect,
yeah,
all they get is the one web page that says, this is what your choice, listen to this or nothing. And it makes it easy, though. I mean, the whole idea is that most people don't want to take time to figure out how to do this. I could, or we can do it here right now. Anyway, next question.
Well, I just wanted somebody to clarify. If you webcast, you have to get a different set of licenses, ASCAP or whatever you were talking about, versus if you podcast. Or if you are a radio station, you have a webcast, can you just make those programs downloadable without additional licensing?
If you have a radio station, you subscribe to ASCAP and BMI,
right,
through the broadcast license code. If you webcast, they have a separate webcast and internet license code. It's pretty cheap. It's not too bad. It's like $250 a year for most of them.
And then what about going to downloading?
But for podcasting and webcasting are currently covered by the same licenses. That may change, which I hope it doesn't, but it may. The RIAA is really, really trying hard to undo what they have done. They allowed these license mechanisms to go through. What's happening is that there are some unscrupulous podcasters who are, you know, making a podcast out of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, calling it a podcast, and all they're doing is basically putting an album out there that anybody can download. And the RIAA, when they said okay to this, didn't anticipate this possibility. So they're trying to clamp down on it for everybody, which would be really bad, I think, but because the number of people that are doing this, I think, is fairly small. But that's still all in litigation. They're still dealing with it. It may change one day.
Okay.
Jeff, I mean, you changed your mission because you couldn't do what you really wanted to do. But you talked also about the future of podcasting and radio. So obviously this is a great place to learn, but if your goal, your ultimate mission is to communicate and reach people with your programs or even through people, where do you see that future in the podcasting going?
Since we may ultimately never get an over-the-air license, I mean, if this window is going to open next year, there will be no other shot. We don't qualify for an LPFM. We do qualify for a non-commercial FM, but only if we get a waiver from both KPLU and KNHC so that they would agree that it's okay for us to interfere with their signals within about 300 yards of our tower. They have to agree to that before we can even get this non-commercial FM. Odds are probably 70-30 against us. So assuming the potential reality, which is that we'll never be more than a webcast slash podcast operation, our mission has kind of changed to be less about necessarily creating content that is only relatable to the Vashon community at large, to adding to that a level of empowerment to each of the content providers so that they can find a way to communicate to a larger audience that goes beyond the island. One of the ways that we're able to keep our community mission intact is that we worked out a way with King County Cable to put Voice of Vashon on the cable system. So our audio actually plays on cable channel 21 for all cable subscribers on the island. They can listen to the radio station without having to deal with internet access. Requires no additional license. And it's a great way for community radio, I forgot to mention this, a great way for community radio to additionally serve their community, which is to look into ways to tie into the community access on your local cable system. And they're usually, you know, they're looking for content, so that's another great way to do it. And on that cable channel, we have a character generator that shows upcoming calendar of events in the community. It shows the weather. It shows, it's kind of like a little mini CNN headline news. You know, we got a crawl going across the bottom. It's kind of cluttered and busy, but it's all local community stuff. And then eventually we're going to start taking videos from members of the community and popping those into the stream and promoting, you know, like music concerts and things that we've got video of, we'll be able to play on the TV channel. So we ultimately may become, for the community, more of a television station than a radio station.
Well, ultimately, right now, what you're talking about is that in terms of actually communicating, you have limited abilities through webcasting. You have to really find other outlets to do it.
Right. Yeah.
In the future, though, is there going to be, when you talked about this radio, car radio thing, is there going to be a way for webcasting to communicate directly with people?
You mean in the car?
Yeah,
or
in the car, in the radio, whatever.
Oh, without a theater?
One of our board members is the president of the Audio Engineers Society. He's been for years now working on a prototype radio for the car that would be an internet radio. The thing is, you have to have a means by which to, you know, you have to, the one community that's very close now to fulfilling its mission of being all Wi-Fi is Philadelphia. San Francisco's working on it. Seattle's working on it. But in Philadelphia right now, just about everywhere you go,
yeah, there's lots of Wi-Fi, but the coverage for a mobile receiver is very different. I'm not going to say it won't work. It will work. It can be made to work. It just,
it's far.
It's ways
off.
It's not today.
Right now, satellite is probably the.
Yeah. I want to throw another idea out, which is improbable, which is a television station might be convinced to figure out you have a stream under ET. As I've done, I just haven't heard of anybody else doing that sort of thing. In commercial or non-commercial TV world.
You're next, and then you first.
I have a basic question. I move a lot of it. We have and I'm going to be real specific. We have a program that we broadcast on a community radio station on Vernon Pacifica affiliate. It's webcast. Mm-hmm. To podcast it, do we just need to apply to this audio court? Or, I mean, I sort of follow this, but What's the next step to putting our program, making it a podcast?
The first step would be recording your program.
Well, okay, so we do that.
Okay, and then you're going to have to compress it, so you're going to have to put it on a computer and make sure you digitize it.
We can do that.
Okay. And then you were talking about basically three different options, but they're very easy for you to do. And one is radioforall.net,
uh-huh.
radio.unimi.org, and then the Pacifica audio port design, which I don't know very much about, but I have to defer to someone else who knows more about audio port. But those are very simple, web-based, the walking through a way to post it. You were using the Apple podcasting, weren't you?
iTunes.
Mm-hmm. You're using iTunes. That's another way to go as well.
Okay, get on their website and they'll walk you through it, basically.
Uh-huh. You could also post to the Bellingham Media site.
Okay.
Maybe like a local.
Okay, I didn't know I had one. So, and then the whatever licensing that station carries to allow them to webcast currently covers you.
Covers podcasting as well.
And then they allow you to, you know, do 16 kilobytes a second, so people can get it on the dial. You can do that on any one of those.
You need to compress your format in the way that you want people to be able to access it.
Okay.
So if you want multiple, If you have multiple formats, you need to compress a 16 kbps version and 64 kbps.
The limitation of the phone line is a real time limitation. So the podcast is a product downloaded, non real time. Podcast is really just this simple script that tells your computer to go fetch this file somewhere else. And the file is a computer file. It's data to the computer, it doesn't care. It happens to be a .mp3 probably, essentially most people like. And you can make it any size you like, it's bigger, it's longer, it takes to download. So it can be very high quality, but it'll just take that much longer to download.
Well, I came here specifically to learn how to make a podcast. Maybe I should have gotten a prize. Haven't heard anything about that.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to speak about the podcasting end of it?
Do you have the the technical facilities to create?
What do I need?
You can actually create a podcast. You could create a podcast using Audacity, which is an editing software, which is free. Another great one is Pro Tools, which isn't. It's about $400 to buy a Pro Tools editing system. It goes right on your computer. You can get a USB microphone that'll go straight into a laptop, and that's it. As far as technology, you've got a microphone, you've got a CD port. If you're going to play music, you can pop CDs in there and rip them into your editing software. You have to learn how to do the editing, which is there's a learning curve there. Once you are able to create audio, you then turn those audio files into MP3s, and they become, just like Jeremy was saying, they become elements that you then have to put into a podcast site. That means
how do you turn the audio then into an MP3? What do you need, of hardware or software?
It's part of the editing software.
Yeah, this is the website for this free program Audacity.com. The audio editing workshop is actually the place that would be able to tell you more about editing audio and compressing into MP3s, and that's happening in the Hugo House today.
Right.
And that workshop's happening in Hugo House today.
The Guitar Center is a great place to get a good quality USB microphone. Also, Pacific Pro Audio is another very good place.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so my question is, so I know like put like an MP3 online.
Mm-hmm.
So, like radio.media.org, basically that does is it lets you have a URL attached to your audio file.
Yeah.
But that still isn't a podcast. Like, a podcast is that command that makes it automatically downloadable. And, I know, Ohio.com hosts, they actually stream your audio for you, so once you get a web address for your audio, they can do that for you. But, I just want to know how. How to get that script, how to turn it actually into a podcast. You have the MP3, you buy it online, radio.media.org, or if you guys do IndieBay, which is the San Francisco Bay Area Independent Media Center, it lets you automatically log on Google News.